This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Tapp, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. They're both chartered financial analysts. Ryder holds the certificate in investment performance measurement from the CFA Institute. Is paper cluttering up your home? Does it add to your stress rather than give you financial cover? We'll talk today about what important documents you should keep and for how long between your personal finance questions. Contact us by email. The address, it's money@mpbonline.org. Good morning, Nancy. December's the last month of the year. What money news are you sharing with us today?
Good morning, Kevin. Well, I'm still very interested in the labor market. And it's intriguing because we are still seeing help wanted signs. The latest jobs numbers were okay, but not certainly what we expected for last month. But what's more interesting is to look at the participation rate, and that's the number of people who are working as compared to the number of people who could be working. And we're seeing that sitting, you know, around 60%, pretty low at this point. But I read an article last week that looks at that participation rate by age. And what we find is that for every group up until 55, it's pretty high. People are going back to work. Where we're seeing a decline, a big decline, is in 55 and plus, that people are not going back into the workforce. And so what we're seeing in our business is that some of those people are just deciding to retire early. At the same time, we're not seeing a spike in the number of people who are declaring benefits for Social Security. So we don't know if they're just, okay, we're going to sit this out for a while. Certainly that group feels the risk from COVID more than the younger group. And so maybe they're delaying because of that. We think maybe some of them will filter back in, or we may just see people just saying, I'm going to just quit early. We'll see.
How do they determine who could be working?
Well, I think they're looking at ages and population, and it's all a statistical model. So that's what we're depending on.
All right. Ryder is with us as well. Ryder, what financial news is on your mind this week?
Good morning, Kevin. Since we are talking about keeping all sorts of personal information and how to keep it organized and how to keep it safe, popped up actually really recently about your personal information and privacy. One very large telecom company, Verizon, they have launched a custom experience and custom experience plus and ID verification programs, which are really actually pretty horrible for the end user. And I can share some of these articles that I'm drawing from for Liz to share later. But there are some programs where they are essentially sharing all information about your app usage, location, et cetera, with Verizon, and they use that to, they say, customize your experience. Of course, what that really means is they're collecting a lot more personal data than previously and quite possibly sharing or selling it. You can turn this off, log into your Verizon mobile account, and going into the settings, you can turn off the custom experience and custom experience plus. You can tell not to use your personal data, and you can reset it so it deletes all of the information they've already collected on you. And then another one is the very popular kind of stuff tracking device called Tile. My mother uses one to keep track of her keys. I know a lot of people use them to keep track of a wallet or a purse. Just put this little plastic device in there, and it will remind you the last place you left it. The company that owns Tile is being bought, and that company sells personal data. So that company may be selling the location of your items and the location of your phone because you are having to share that all the time with that company. So there are alternatives. I know both Samsung and Apple make the same sort of device that pair specifically with their phones. And I would think both of those companies would have a less incentive to be selling your personal information because they're making more money off of the other services they're selling. So two kind of personal information privacy issues that just cropped up. Like I said, I will share those. I do think they're concerning, and there are things you can do about both of them. I will share those so that Liz can get that publicized.
What is the value of knowing where your Aunt Sally's purse is?
Well, because if she happens to call you very often and she's like, "Where did I leave my purse?" then that's going to be super useful.
Someone buying that information?
Well, so someone buying that information, I mean, because they would know where you are. And they would know where you tend to go and how long you are staying in different places. And to someone who is advertising or trying to sell you services, that is incredibly valuable information. And these devices, you know, if you're just leaving your keys somewhere in your house every time, then it's not going to be useful. If you have a tendency, if you travel a lot or you go a lot of places and you're concerned about leaving things, you know, at work, at a store, et cetera, that might be more useful for you. But like I said, or like you pointed out, you know, what is the value of that versus what is the cost of having somebody else have access to that information?
But in other words, so these things are basically trackers because they're keeping tabs. Okay. And so I see that.
Yeah,
so you're
trackers.
Saying, yeah, based on the items you're tracking, that could give someone an idea of your personal habits, your daily routine,
absolutely,
that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And another concern with all of these, it was whenever you involve, the more parties you involve with this information, the more opportunities for that information to leak out or to be hacked. If this information was all contained on your device and it was very secure, you know, there's only one place that a hacker can go to try to get it. I don't know. It's not necessarily at that much risk if that's a very secure place. But sharing it with one company, okay, well, that opens up more opportunities. Well, if they share it with more companies, it's out there in the wild at that point. And while I don't know that we've seen issues where people are using these things maliciously, although I know people have discussed scenarios where it is possible to use this information maliciously, opening it up to more people having that information, it's just a risk that you don't want to take.
Before the new year starts, you might want to get this year's financial documents sorted. Today, we're going to talk about what to keep and for how long as we await your personal finance questions. So, Nancy, in terms of where we should store documents, what about paper documents? Where do you think is a safe spot to store our paper documents?
Well, a lot of people still like to have paper documents. And we encourage our clients, if they have adult children, to begin talking to them about their financial situations and to at least let them know where to go if something happens to find all their information. Now, that can be in a notebook and or it can be in a file drawer. For some people, they actually put it in an actual safe. But you need to let people know who are close to you, your adult children, where those things are, what to look for. And don't just tell them one time. Tell them every time you see them because, you know, I have had that experience myself where my dad has told me things and I have to go back and say, now, what did you say about that? Because I don't remember. We're so busy doing other things. Make sure that wherever you put it, it is in a private location. You don't want just anybody coming across those documents. But it does need to be organized and all together and always thinking about what if something happened to me immediately, how would anyone find everything? Would they be able to track things? Would they know who to call?
And also, I guess paper records are somewhat destructible, so you would want to make sure that it's away from the elements as well.
Well, yes, and certainly putting them in transparent covers to protect them. Also knowing that, you know, if you live on the coast of Mississippi, that when you get ready to leave and evacuate, you need to grab that set of documents and take with you so you can have it.
So, Ryder, I think some people might actually possibly scan their paper documents and make electronic copies out of them. So when we talk about digital or electronic documents, some thoughts on storing those?
Yes, and storing electronic copies is a great idea. It certainly cut down on the clutter. We're going to cover a lot of different types of paperwork, and you don't need to be keeping every single receipt you've ever used if you want. You can keep so much stuff digitally, and that's going to be satisfactory for the job. There's going to be some super important documents that you do want to keep a physical copy of. You have to keep the physical copy of, for instance, your Social Security card or something like that. And those, as well as Nancy mentioned, you want to be able to take them with you sometimes. But scanning and keeping digital copies is a great idea. And I think there's a few things to keep in mind. You want to always have a backup of your electronic records. And I would suggest to people to have two backups. One, a physical, as we call it, in-location backup. So you have your computer sitting there on your desk, maybe it's a laptop, but you also have a separate hard drive or a separate backup device. It could even be just one of those flash drives that you plug into your computer, and you just have a process for making sure that stays updated. There's a ton of software on there. There's a ton of software probably included on your computer that can help you with that. I know I use Apple computers a lot, and they have a backup software called Time Machine, and it keeps track of things. Even after you've deleted them from your computer, you can still go back and find some old copies. So important to keep in mind what all is being saved and what all is being deleted when you have a backup like that. And then also have an online backup. And there's a lot of different online backup services. I know a few big ones are Carbonite, Backblaze, iDrive, but they all have slightly different features, and it can just be a matter of what do you want in those features. One very popular thing, Dropbox, is it just replicates a folder you have on your computer. And one of the downsides of that is if you delete it from your computer, it's also deleted from your cloud backup. So that's not really a backup system. So again, you want to make sure they are keeping versions even after you've deleted them, if that's what you want. Some online backups, maybe it allows you to share those documents with family members or even have family members access them after you die. That could be very important. Referring back to Nancy's paperwork issues with her parents. And you can also have them, it can back up multiple computers, multiple devices. You can have your whole family protected with this. And then, of course, just how easy is it to use? What's the interface like? This is a very competitive market. There are a lot of products out there that can do these things. So you can be picky about what you want.
If you have a question for our experts, send an email to money@mpbonline.org. We're talking about record keeping today. Did you hear about the man who mistakenly threw out $367 million? Ouch. We'll tell you more about that next. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
Information presented on Money Talks is meant to provide general information about the topics discussed and is not necessarily the opinion of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The information presented does not create any type of relationship between the hosts and guests and the listening audience. Please consult a financial advisor or any other qualified professional for guidance about your personal finance questions.
On On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Dr. Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, and Associate Professor of Preventive Medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Listen to the show every Monday at 11 or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. Our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org, is one way to hear past broadcasts. You can also download the MPB Public Media app, and you can listen on your iPhone or Android phone to all the local MPB Think Radio programs on your schedule. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotter-Janderson, President of New Perspectives and Ryder Taft Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives. We hope you take care when throwing out your unneeded financial data. A British man accidentally threw out a hard drive with the private key he needed to access his 7,500 bitcoins. The local council rejected his request to look through the landfill, though. And our producer, Liz Gill, says, I think that the guy is still trying to find that key and has had no luck so far.
Ouch.
Yeah. And who knows, with Bitcoin, it could be much more, much less than it was than when he lost the key. So,
you know, a weekend makes all the difference.
As we get ready for the new year, we're going to talk about financial documents to keep and for how long. I'll talk about a classification, and our experts will let me know what they think about keeping the documents and for how long. So, Nancy, we'll start with you with tax returns.
Oh, boy, Kevin. You know, the IRS works slowly. Very, very slowly. And I cannot tell you the number of times if we've gotten calls from clients about an issue that dates, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And suddenly we have to go back and find all that information. They can go back as far as 7 years. And so it's really important to hang on to those documents, those full tax returns, which it's easier to do that now since they can be digital. But you also need the supporting documentation, because if they have a question about something, you're going to have to prove all of that backup information and prove that line on your tax return. So your W-2s, 1099s, charitable donation receipts, any other receipts that you're using for deductions, they should be kept somewhere safe. But again, it's very common for them not to even reference what happened last year, but several years ago. And you need to be able to have supporting documents so you can say, no, I was right. This is good.
So if I or a friend of mine maybe fudged on, say, financial or charitable contributions 8 years ago, my friend is now safe from the IRS?
Probably. And understand that they don't look deeply into everyone's. But if there's something, they use a system so they can look for something that's outside the norm. And if there's a question, they will then ask for the document.
Very good. So, Ryder, how about pay stubs, bank statements, and credit card statements?
Kevin, just a quick word on your friend. While 8 years may be long enough for the IRS, it is not long enough for your morals and ethics and conscience. That will always remain. Pay stubs, bank statements, and credit card statements. These are actually really good ones for saving digital copies. If you do online banking, online credit card, some people have a payroll system that may give them an online pay stub. You already have digital copies. No need to print these. And they're already stored at your bank login. So you already have a pretty good way of storing those. It doesn't need to clutter up. And another reason these are really good for digital copies is, for the most part, you're just going to want to hold these, verify that everything happened correctly, and then you're pretty much done. You know, your credit card statement, you say, okay, well, my credit card was for $1,126. You just want to verify a couple weeks later when that payment comes out of your bank account or when you write that check. You may want to hold on to bank statements, credit card statements for about a year just to make sure, again, that payments are correct, that everything is smooth, and nobody comes back and says, oh, did you pay me for this? Where's my check for this? But then pay stubs are an interesting one. You probably want to keep your full last year's worth of pay stubs. That's for a couple of reasons. You want to use it to verify information with your employer in a couple of places. One, you want to make sure that they're withholding what they said they would. So say you wanted $100 withheld from every paycheck to go into your 401k. If you notice your pay stub doesn't seem to change, you may look at it and see, oh, they're only withholding $75. Or maybe they're withholding more than you asked. So you'll want to dig into that, verify, get that corrected with them. Also, how much tax are they withholding? And then when your W-2 comes in tax season, you're going to want to verify that what they reported that they paid you is the same as what is on your W-2, the same on your W-2 and your pay stubs, adding all that up. And then, of course, verifying that the tax withholding that they did is correct. If there was a mistake, a W-2, it's should be very accurate because it is a document that goes to the IRS. It's a little kind of higher standard than just something that they're sending to you. But it does also, if a number is missed in one place, that's the only place and it's gone. Whereas a pay stub, if there's an inaccuracy on the pay stub, you have at least a dozen of them every year. So it's not, you might have another one that you can double check with. And also, we always talk about understanding your finances and understanding your income. And pay stubs are useful for that. Not only are they going to show you exactly how much you make, but they're going to show you the pattern of how you make money. Do you make money? Do you have some commissions coming in? Is your pay seasonal? Or are you just a flat salary? How, where is your money going to, as in taxes, state taxes, local taxes, federal taxes? What are you paying for? What benefits are you paying for? Do you have health insurance? Do you have union dues? What are you paying for? And are you getting the value out of those that you're paying for? And then, of course, withholdings. Are you paying into a 401k? Are you paying into an employer stock plan? Are you paying into a health savings account? And so that's a really great way of keeping track where all those dollars are going, because even though your paycheck may be $1,500, you may only see half of that in your bank account. And sometimes it's just good to double check where all that money's going, make sure you know where it is. And that's something, again, keep those for at least a year so you can verify that everything is correct, but great for digital copies.
Nancy, what about utility bills like water, phone, or electricity?
Well, normally, as soon as they are paid and cleared out, you should be able to get rid of those bills. And the lucky thing about all of this is that so much of that is digital now, so if you do have to go back, you can find them. There's one exception here, and we've come across this several times, and I'm encouraging everybody to go to the Secretary of State's website and look up unclaimed funds, because you can find on there if there's some money that is due you for some reason. And we often will find that for our clients, and the problem is that sometimes they've moved. So we need some kind of verification, and a utility bill does this, that says, yes, they did actually live here, and they are that money does belong to them. That would be the only exception. But otherwise, you can probably just toss them.
So, Ryder, if you choose a print copy of an ATM receipt, for example, is that useful? How long should that be kept?
No, that's not useful. You should get rid of that, Kevin. ATM receipts, you want to make sure that, again, it came out of your bank account correctly. If you only withdrew $20 and there was a $2.50 fee, you want to make sure that the amount hitting your bank account was $22.50. And one thing we've talked about before a lot is kind of a good security practice is setting up alerts on your bank account, your credit card, et cetera. And so when you take money out, if you have alerts, you should get an alert immediately from your bank with the amount that was withdrawn. So again, you swipe your card, you dip your card into an ATM for $20, $40, then you should get an alert saying $40 was withdrawn from your bank account. And so you shouldn't really have anything to worry about. Again, ATMs, these are bank-like products and are usually very accurate and secure, but it wouldn't be crazy to hear that one malfunctioned or it did not actually spit out the right number of dollars. And that's another thing. Verify the number of dollars you withdraw from an ATM. But as far as keeping that receipt for any sort of record-keeping purposes, you don't really need to do that because it would be on your bank transaction pretty quickly.
Nancy, you had something you wanted to add?
Oh, I was just going back to this, what Ryder mentioned about pay stubs. And it is not uncommon for us to see errors on contributions to 401ks. And this is a big deal because you may be missing out on a matching contribution from your employer. So I'm just going to reiterate what Ryder said just to make sure you look at that pay stub and that what is coming out is correct.
So it sounds like with digital backups, it sounds like the good plan would be to save the paper copy until it's verified, whatever that transaction is, and then it might be safe to go ahead and get rid of those.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Now, before our next break, for years, I was very diligent about, I had a check register and I would always balance my bank statement every month without fail. It always added up to the perfect penny or whatever. But as places stopped giving receipts, fast food places and stuff, and so I got kind of lazy about putting transactions in. And what I would do would be I would wait till I'd get my bank statement and then go back, and anything that wasn't in my check register, I would just, you know, pencil in or whatever. Well, I decided that seemed to be kind of a waste. So now, maybe this is not a good idea, but I don't really balance my checkbook anymore and don't pay too close attention to my bank statement, because I think when you have online banking, you can verify a lot of that stuff from your online account. So hopefully.
Go ahead. Kevin, I also get an alert. So I do have the Apple Watch, so it buzzes me every time I use my credit card or my debit card. And so I know, well, that just happened, and that is an actual charge, and I'm okay with that. So that helps me.
We're talking about your financial record keeping today. What's a surprise benefit of keeping receipts? Our producer, Liz Gill, will have that information for you next. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Jason Klein from Fix It 101. If you ever thought about changing a doorknob or fixing a leaky faucet, some jobs just aren't that difficult, and yes, you can do it. If you want to find out how to do those things, listen to Fix It 101, podcast everywhere.
Hey there, it's David Green. You know, there comes a time when you've just got to let go of that old vehicle. Maybe it has lots of great memories, but it's also maybe just taking up space. And selling it can be such a hassle. So here's one thought. Let this station take that vehicle off your hands. Proceeds from the sale benefit this station, and you could get a tax break. Thanks.
Donate your car, motorcycle, boat, or RV by going to mpbonline.org.
This is Money Talks, MPB Think Radio's program about personal finance. I'm Kevin Farrell, here with Dr. Nancy Lotter-Janderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. They're both chartered financial analysts, and Ryder holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. So what's a surprise reason you should keep your receipts? Our producer, Liz Gill, has the story.
I try to keep so many receipts, and one reason is because quite a few years ago, I heard this story about a couple who stayed at a fancy hotel for their honeymoon, and they were able to stay at that hotel again for the original price they paid. The hotel had like a gimmick promotion thing, because she had the receipt in her scrapbook from like 50 years before, and that has always been one of my reasons to hold on to receipts. But when I went to document that for this show, I could not find the report of that incident. And so that just completely throws out the window my reason for keeping all these papers at my house. And so I need to stop keeping papers at my house, because nobody is going to give me a stay at the Plaza for 25 cents a night.
So, so Liz, you're saying you didn't keep the receipt that showed that keeping the receipt was good? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what you're... I have so much paper at my house. Honestly, folks, here's a little secret. I produce these Money Talk shows so I can make myself do the things I preach about. And that cross-cut shredder is going to get a workout over Christmas at my house.
And a scanner. You need a scanner.
You bet.
Yes. Yeah, well, Liz, I have a friend who is famous for keeping every receipt, and the only thing it did for him, it solved an argument between him and his wife about when a particular tree was planted in their yard, and she won because he kept that receipt.
So it's just to figure out which receipts to keep. That would be the key there. So let's move on to property records. Nancy, what about those? Like, say, the
paperwork?
Oh, that's
very important.
Go ahead.
Very important, yeah. You know, so all of your closing documents, and when you purchase a property, you're usually going to have quite a big pile of documents. But those are really important. And a lot of them are disclosure, but all of your closing information that shows how much you paid for the property. Is there a mortgage on it, all of the information related to the closing cost and how all of that transaction occurred. That is really important to keep up with. Now, we do have one advantage when we have a primary residence. So if you live in your house and you sell that house, for an individual, you can have a gain up to $250,000. For a couple, a gain of up to $500,000, and not have to declare that and not have to pay tax on that. But you still would want to track any renovations or additions on the house, because it could be that you're going to convert that to a rental. And that will be important at that point to show how much you put into the house, the original purchase price. Did you renovate the kitchen? Did you add on a deck? Anything that you did to improve the house, keep up with those receipts so you have those original costs with you. And they can be added to what you originally paid for it if you do have to be in a situation of paying tax on a capital gain.
And also, I guess, any kind of record that would be connected to some sort of extended warranty or those sorts of things. You, again, want to make sure you keep proof that you purchased the original item and when, I guess.
Yes, and a lot of people will get a home warranty, and that should be in your closing documents. That becomes very important, and I've certainly heard of a lot of cases of, you know, within 6 months, suddenly the air conditioning breaks. And to be able to put your hands on that very quickly and take advantage of that is important.
What about, you know, I've often heard when you have property damage, maybe a flood or something, and then you've got to go to the insurance company and give them an estimate of the value of the items, you know, lost. So major appliances, TVs, large screen TVs, that sort of thing. Do you think it's a good idea to save the purchase receipts from those types of items?
Well, I think it's an easy thing to do, especially if you're tracking any renovations. I do have a folder that I use, any kind of purchase like that, a new appliance, a renovation, work on the house. I just pop that receipt into that folder, and it's there for me if I need it.
And again, hearkening back to our digital discussion, that would be some of the types that maybe you would want to scan as well to have that digital copy.
Right, and it's also helpful if you had some work done and you went back to get some additional repair work to know, well, what did I pay for it in the first place, and is this price that I'm now getting, is that reasonable?
Ryder, what about mortgage-related documents?
Yes, so mortgage-related documents, of course, just like any other property records, you want to keep those at least as long as you're paying that mortgage. You want to make sure some of that is going to have all of the information you need to be paying it, and, of course, all of the terms and making sure nothing changes there that isn't supposed to happen. So you might want to keep these at least as long as you have the mortgage until you've paid it off, but also holding it for some time afterwards, just kind of a vague time afterwards, just because you may be questioned whether or not you've paid it off. And again, your bank statement showing that you've made that final payment is going to be important. But also importantly, when you pay off a loan and mortgages, student loans, personal loans, you will probably have some documentation from the loan company saying, congratulations, you've repaid your loan. That's going to be very important to keep. And making sure that that matches the records there. So, of course, your name and address and the loan number matches what the loan document said, just to make sure there's no discrepancy in the paperwork. And if anyone ever asks, you can produce that. And for some folks, this congratulations, you've repaid your student loan, you've repaid your mortgage, you might want to, you know, frame that, hang it on the wall. That's a good one to keep.
So, you know, Nancy, I think some people, if they're not good record keepers, might be daunted by sort of cleaning things out. But I guess some of the things we've talked about, as you're able to clear out some of the clutter, it makes organizing the important stuff easier because it's not all cluttered.
Exactly. And it feels really good to get a handle on all of this and get your arms around it. And I think once a year is a good time to do that. And also then you can sit down, if you're certainly in a couple, the two of you need to sit down together and really look and analyze your financial situation and look at your insurance policies, look at your tax situation, look at your retirement accounts. All of that can come at the same time.
Let's circle back a little bit, Nancy. We've talked about homeowners and their documents to keep. What about renters? Are there some things that they need to keep on hand?
Well, certainly keep your rental document, that lease document that you have, and keep it as long as that landlord still has your security deposit. So even if you move out, you want to make sure that you hang on to that until you get your funds back and you know that everyone has been everyone's okay with the agreement and we've all gone our way, and then that's the end of the contract. At that point, you can shred it.
All right, Ryder, again, we mentioned, what about those brokerage statements?
Yes, those are very important. And for clients of an investment advisor, so clients of ours, where your assets are held at an independent third party, we use a third party custodian, we produce reports and show folks what is in their accounts, how it's performed, what it's done. And it's very important that if you're receiving reports from a third party advisor, that you don't simply just trust them blindly. Well, you should trust your advisor, but that you verify against the brokerage statement. So the brokerage statement will come directly from the custodian, importantly, and it will say exactly how much you started the period with, how much you ended the period with. They should have a month-to-date, quarter-to-date, year-to-date, at least two of those figures. And they will also show an activity section. They will show any deposits you made and any withdrawals. As far as deposits and withdrawals, really important to verify that those are correct. Really important to verify that there are no unexpected withdrawals, no unexpected fees, and that the deposit amounts did get recorded correctly and happened at about the time you expected them to. But again, verifying that end of month, end of quarter, end of year balance is going to be super important just to make sure that something big and broad hasn't happened and something has moved away or transferred out, et cetera.
So, Nancy, let's flip the script here just a bit. What are some examples of some things that you should not get rid of?
Well, there are those things you should always hang on to, and certainly birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates. Death certificates are really important. In our business, we often have a situation of inheritance, and we have to go back and find those dates on valuing assets, passports, your wills, and any kind of medical power of attorney. Those need to be kept in a very safe place, and people need to know where to find those things. Your military records. This was important for my father-in-law upon his passing so that we could find those military records and see what was due him at his burial. Any kind of legal filings, lawsuits, anything like that, keep that always. Retirement pension plans and beneficiary forms. We always like to make sure that our clients have copies of beneficiary forms so that someone can easily find that and know what those are, what they are due. Adoption papers are also important to keep track of. Your passports. So there are quite a variety of things that you always need to hang on to and keep in a very safe place.
And I guess we could add a vaccination record to that list as something more.
Yeah, at this time, yeah.
And I always like to go back and look at my Social Security card to see what my handwriting was like when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. And it is also kind of cool to have something that's over 50 years old and it's not me. So that's good. We're talking about what to do with all the financial paper you may have around your house. Where can you find out what the IRS recommends papers to keep and for how long? We'll have that information for you next. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
We're glad you found our show, Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotter-Janderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. Here's a program reminder. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m., you can listen live to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio, immediately following Money Talks. Today, we're talking about what records to keep and for how long. A link to IRS topic number 305, record keeping, will be on the information for this show so you can see what the IRS recommends you keep, what financial records. So, Ryder, we talked a little bit about this, but remind us of why do you think it's important to keep receipts for big ticket items that we might have purchased?
Yes, so there's going to be a number of reasons you want to keep receipts for that. Firstly, if you have an insurance claim, so you mentioned, oh, say your house floods or you get robbed, you know, furniture, jewelry, expensive electronics, you're going to need to have that information. Secondly, warranty information may require the receipt, and in the absence, certainly, of anything else showing what date you purchased a computer or an HVAC system, you're going to want to have a receipt to show when that was done, and also invoices showing when it was installed, how much that cost. And perhaps there's certainly situations even after an insurance claim where you may need to kind of keep records of the labor involved in installing some larger household equipment. And lastly, also it's good to have a record of when it was purchased, what exactly you purchased, just in case you need to get any other information on the product.
Producer Liz Gill points out that for your receipts, and again, we talked about maybe converting some of our paper receipts to a digital copy. You know, the something that comes off of a cash register receipt is sometimes doesn't have a long shelf life, as it were, and maybe, you know, a couple years down the road, it might have degraded or the ink smeared or something. So maybe go ahead and get a digital copy of those sorts of things while they're in good shape, and that will help you out if you need to reference one at a later date. You know, Nancy, when we talk about disposing of documents, I saw an interesting ad for a product. It's giant. It's like a giant ink pad. And so when you have your sensitive information, you can just, you know, blot through your name and your address and your account number. I thought that was interesting. I can't remember how much it costs, because it seems like, you know, you could do the same thing with a magic marker.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of Mission Impossible. You know, are they able to then scan that and put it under ultraviolet light, and now I can see what you wrote, you know, just like they use the pad, and, oh, somebody wrote here. And we go through shredders in our office, Kevin, and a good cross-cut shredder is important to have to get rid of private information to make sure it's disposed of appropriately. Often we will have clients who bring in bags of their old documents, and we shred them for them. You often will see free shredding events in the community, so you can make use of that. You can go to a commercial place and have them shred. But if I go to a commercial commercial place with my shredding, my personal documents, I want to make sure I can stand there and watch them while they shred it so I know for sure that it's disposed of properly and nobody has access to my private information, because you have a lot of really valuable stuff in there. So be careful about that and treat it very tenderly when you get rid of all that.
I guess maybe some people might think, well, you know, the phone number, whatever. But, you know, any bit of personal information can be kind of used against you. I think we sometimes need to stay on guard because the people out there, the scammers and things, are always trying to come up with an easier way to scam us and to, you know, get information they don't deserve. So really any bit of private information, Nancy, it's important to safeguard.
It is, absolutely. And in our office, we just have so much information that we are the stewards of. And so we take that very seriously as far as making sure any documents with names, personal information of any sort, that gets shredded appropriately.
So, Ryder, when it comes to keeping digital records safe, I guess usernames and passwords are in play. Do you have some tips and some ideas about keeping those safe and some things for to coming up with passwords, maybe?
Yes, that is absolutely important. So I highly recommend using complex passwords to keep your account information safe. A complex password is not necessarily a weird jumble of letters, but length of the password actually matters a lot. And you can use a password manager. So there are, if you have, again, I'm referring to Apple products a lot, but they have a keychain password manager, is very secure, and you would want to use your longest, most complex password to protect those, of course. And that just makes it really easy for you to store your passwords so that you can find them if you can forget them. But also, it's a tool that automatically enters passwords for convenience when it actually is you using the passwords. Use unique passwords. So again, do not use password 123 for every single website that you go to. And, of course, just general computer safety is going to be very important. You may want to have antivirus, anti-malware software, do a scan from time to time. But also, one of the biggest ways that our private information is taken is people trick us into getting it. So you get an email saying, "Hi, this is a security alert on your bank account. Please click here and log in." Always say you have a bank account, a credit card with Trustmark or Regions or Chase. If you get an alert, if you get any, even just, hey, your end of month bank statement is ready, a lot of times you will notice something is wrong with those emails. If it's truly a phishing attempt, it's called phishing when they're trying to angle for information from you. But you can also just go directly to Trustmark's website. If you want to log into your account, just go directly to the website. Make sure you're at Trustmark.com, Regions.com, Chase.com. Make sure it's a secure connection. You have the little lock icon. Make sure that you are logging in using your information and nothing is suspicious about that. So, again, a lot of these things are great, but also you are very often the weakest link in your security chain. So make sure that nobody is fooling you, nobody is tricking you into giving up any of that information. And those can come as emails, those can come as phone calls. Just be very careful about any time you are going to something sensitive or giving over your personal information.
You know, my favorite new scam along those lines is, it usually comes in a text message, but it's, "Hey, you paid your phone bill this month. Here's a prize for you." And I'm like, wait a minute, it's not the way it works. We're supposed to pay it because we've already gotten the prize. It's our phone service. So anyway, that's going to wrap us up for today. Money Talks is a production of MPB Think Radio, funded in part by generous financial support from listeners. To hear today's show or a previous show, you can visit moneytalks.mpbonline.org or listen to the podcast by searching for Money Talks on your preferred podcasting app. Our show is produced by Liz Gill, and our call screener today was Java Chapman. So for Dr. Nancy Lotridge Anderson and Ryder Taff, I'm Kevin Farrell, inviting you to join us Tuesdays at 9 a.m. for Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.